And welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us now is award-winning cartoonist Peter Cooper. Now, we have previously chatted with Cooper about his work Insectopolis, which was just released in 2025, earlier this year. And now there is a new book from this award-winning cartoonist who has had work in a lot of familiar magazines and different publications, including The New Yorker. Peter Cooper has just released Wish We Weren't Here, Postcards from the Apocalypse. Peter, thank you for joining us here on This Green Earth.
Well, thank you for having me again.
We're happy to have you back because we had such an interesting conversation with you before. Tell us a little bit about you and how you came about, not only into the cartooning world, but also how you have used it as a way to express a lot of things that are happening around us in the world.
I do a weekly environmental comic for the French magazine Charlie Hebdo, which is well known for the fact that it was attacked in 2015 and several cartoonists and many people were killed in a terrorist attack. Anyway, I do a weekly strip for them, and I realized after 5 years of doing it, I had a collection worth, and that seemed to be a pretty good time to put it together, given that the words climate and change are being erased from a lot of our government documents. And as I'm sure your listeners are conscious that from maybe direct experience that we're in the midst of something that is not a hoax.
In Wish We Weren't Here, it's really intriguing. The cartoons are almost like they morph into stories. And so you take a familiar image and you twist or morph it to share a storyline. Can you work us through your process on these drawings and how you developed these storylines?
So each page of Wish We Weren't Here is a four-panel wordless comic. I don't speak French, so it was perfect for getting connected with French magazine. The editor suggested, though, at a certain point that I add a headline that references the subject that I was covering. So I'm inspired by the various environmental news I'm reading. And by inspired, I mean terrified. And that tends to engender an image in one form or another. And the morphing part is, it's somewhat like trying to express, say, the melting in the Arctic, to have an image of, say, the map of the ice cap, and as it slowly melts, it morphs into Munch's The Scream, for example, that the shapes change and do that. There's a lot of different ways that I can try to convey these issues, and I try to do it in a poetic way. Somebody playing golf, for example, and as you're pulling back, as they're hitting the ball, the green turns out to be a little spot of green in the midst of a drought environment. So things like that, like it's kind of a camera pullback to reveal something, or something that can express one of these topics. So when I have the strip in Charlie Hebdo, there's the information, let's say an article from the New York Times or NPR or European news, and that it gives a little short encapsulation, which I've included in the book, so that if somebody looks at these four wordless panels and goes, gee, I wonder, you know, what's the story here? They can actually see where I got that story from and could look it up on the internet. And I mean, follow through on finding out more information about the topic that I'm covering. So each one of them has a four panel image. And then say, you know, under it, it talks about the scientists warning, you know, we're going to reach a climate tipping point if we don't do anything soon. And how do I can visualize that? I had in one of the cartoons, I have what appears to be a young girl doing one of those skydiving things where you're attached to the guide who jumps out with you.
Right.
And as they're jumping out, it says the temperature is, 1.09 centigrade. And she's looking chagrined, and as they are falling down, the parachute comes out saying 1.5. And then in the last panel, the parachute has changed to have a higher centigrade and the ropes are breaking. So it's how to express these circumstances and these little stories about what's happening and the urgency that we need to be responding to them.
I found it interesting as I went through a dozen or so different cartoons or that you drew, that I found myself looking at them. Like you say, there are four panels each. I think for most of them, we seem to be in the third and possibly the fourth panel.
Yeah, unfortunately, it usually is that way. I did try to have towards the end of the book, like, okay, how can I have a few positive comments on this? And some of them are, for example, there is a case in Switzerland where the Swiss government had violated human rights of its citizens by failing to do enough to combat climate change. And so I have a group of people and their faces coming together, the shape in between them turns into the shape of Switzerland. And then the last panel is a judge's gavel. Switzerland is now turned into the embodiment of a person. So that's part of that morphing process, is looking at how I can tell a story like this and have it lead, you know, visually. Comics are just a remarkable form because there's so many different ways that you can storytell, and that morphing quality that you can get where one thing turns into another. It's a little like M.C. Escher, where, you know, you're looking at a visual and you seeing this thing twist, and then you're like, wait a minute, where am I now? There's a lot of opportunities to do that. And I really like the pantomime aspect of being an international language, so that, say, it runs in France, it also runs in a magazine in Italy, and with no text at all, and that people can understand what I'm talking about without any words.
Another one you have is of this story regarding the teenagers in Montana who took the state and the oil companies to court to challenge them, and they actually won their case. And so that was another example of near the end of the book, where there is some good news, some silver linings there.
Yeah, and there are little bits and pieces of that, you know, where people are taking action, and, you know, it's upsetting to the corporation to be losing profits while, you know, kids are being able to run in a field with breathable air. And my, you know, final panel, one of them is about wind and solar energy overtaking fossil fuels in Europe, that you know, like, for the first time that alternative energy was actually working, doing better in terms of creating energy, and that, you know, therefore profits were going down. So in the four panels, the first three show kids with a solar panel or by a wind farm and looking very pleased to be out in nature. And the last panel is the crying oil executive. So I'm always anxious to be able to express something that leads to some possibility or action step. But the fact is that so many of the topics I'm looking at are really mostly a urgent call to action. You know, we can do up to a point. You know, the thing that I'm coming across is, in reading my news feed, is like almost entirely environmental topics. So that once they identify that, oh, you're looking for environmental things, here's more. And of course, I have to like make sure that I'm getting the information is correct, given how much we get guided in directions that don't necessarily truly inform us. But the idea that, for example, personal responsibility, which of course matters, but that was something promoted by oil companies to basically put their issues on us and say, like, yes, you individually, you know, or the plastic companies have put recycling logos on every object, even though when I looked into it, I found like that most of those are absolutely meaningless. And they promoted the idea that we need to take action, as opposed to the companies that are making this huge profit and essentially are spending millions of dollars to hide the negative quality of what they're doing. They could be applying that to actually fixing the problems, that they keep on trying to push that off and saying, we have to do more. And I mean, you, the public has to do more. We, the company, we're just doing our job here, making lots of money.
Right. Alcoa did something similar to that back in the late 70s and early 80s, when they were a big promoter of recycling aluminum cans, and actually broadcast their support in establishing recycling programs. But yet at the end of the day, it was all about the consumer that was being asked to step up and recycle their cans, and not necessarily what Alcoa was going to do to change their behavior.
Exactly. Like, just for example, there's a famous commercial I grew up with that has a Native American on a horse, and people are throwing garbage out their windows, right, and crying at the end of it, of the scene. Yeah. It turned out the Native American was an Italian actor, and that the ad was put forward by, I think it was the plastic industry or alcohol. You know, you have to stop doing this. Now, of course, granted, people being aware of these things, I'm very much pushing in Insectopolis, is to make people aware of the importance of insects, for example, and to be conscious, being conscious of our environment. And even for that matter, most basic principle is recognizing how much our well-being is based on having contact with nature. And it's one of the things that we're losing touch with more as we move more towards our screens and cell phones. Not to get on the soapbox about this, but just, I think we all recognize when we are in a natural environment, like, you take a hike, you just feel better. And for that matter, our connectivity with one another, one of the things I'm really trying to do is just go out and be with people more. And, especially when we're not in the midst of a pandemic, but just to have contact with people and get that sense of community that right now we desperately need to have, be conscious of, because I think there's so many forces that are driving us away from each other, feeling isolated, and the whole concept of, we're ragged individualists. It's like, yeah, but we need each other desperately to connect, to actually determine what reality is, because we're right now in a zone of where basic information is so obfuscated, it's so hard to determine like what's real. One of the cartoons, I have a what appears to be a fireman putting out a fire, and the first panel is the fire, and he's got his hose and it's spraying on the fire, and as you back up, you see that the truck that the fire hose is attached to is an Exxon truck. And yes, and there's the spraying of gasoline on the fire, which is both a metaphor and actually going on. So I do have these on a personal level. When I do a cartoon like this, I do feel this sort of like I did something. I, planted a flag. I made a point. And then when I'm done with it, I sort of like, wait a minute, what was the point I made again? Ah.
They are very deeply human experiences that you are drawing, and that people can attach themselves to emotionally. I'm looking at one that depicts a tree being uprooted and then a person writing a check for the Save the Trees Fund. So I think it's not only reflective of the corporations, but it's kind of a mirror on all of us as well.
It's really important to look at our own behavior in this. And I feel guilty as can be. Like I just came from an entomology group together, and the meeting was out in Portland, Oregon. So I'm getting on an airplane and flying there, and I can't help but be conscious of the fact that I'm talking about all these environmental things, and then I'm getting on an airplane and spewing more gasoline into the atmosphere. So it's one of those things. That it's very hard to not have a carbon footprint.
Right. And there's so many topics. It's 132 pages of cartoons. And so it seems there is an endless well, unfortunately, of stories that are coming out that are reflecting what is happening to our planet. And you have been creating these cartoons for a while. Your past has been deeply environmental and human. Do you ever need to take a step back yourself and give yourself a break from absorbing all of this?
I mean, I've become more and more a Buddhist-ish in my thinking, where I'm just sort of like, right now, this moment is fantastic, and I'm, you know, as much as it can be, and I'm going to be conscious of that as much as I possibly can. And I highly recommend doing that. But I am taking in way too much news, and I definitely, for example, I recently was on a book tour for Insectopolis for the Spanish and Italian editions. And while I was doing that, I was very much engaged in the activity of promoting the book and meeting people and going to, I was at the Natural History Museum in Madrid and at a science festival in Genoa. And I wasn't thinking about US politics for a while. And I was deeply relieved. Because of the nature of my work, I do tend to stare into the abyss, and it does stare back, as it turns out. But it has inspired me. The worst thing that can happen is that you get petrified by it, and then you just are inert. Even though I, of course, get depressed by the information, every time I sort of express that to people online or in groups, and just say, you know, I'm doing these cartoons, and they just seem like it's throwing a pebble in the ocean, hoping, you know, to ripple into a tsunami of change. They're like, well, yeah, but I, you know, seeing your cartoons makes me feel sort of like the connection with somebody, you know, we're talking about these things, and it's better than, you know, the ostrich with their head in the sand.
Right. There has to be a balance, and we can't be apathetic. We have to understand what is happening, and actions need to be taken, and doing deep dives, though sometimes you do have to come up for a breath and give yourself a break. So it is an interesting, I think, human balance that we have to strike of listening and being aware and also keeping ourselves mentally healthy. When you look at the next generation, and you have done so many of these works, and you have become this prolific cartoonist, and your messaging is being taken in globally, what kind of advice would you give to this next generation that might want to follow in your path?
I have to say, I came out of my tour in both going to Europe and then going to the entomology conference feeling really positive, because at the entomology conference, there were a lot of young entomologists or people in school doing this in one form or another. And they were absolutely brilliant in all senses. And like, just, they were so enthusiastic and so proactive in finding out what they can do and just identifying through the interest in insects, identifying all the connective tissue of that, and how studying these things and being conscious of them just on the most basic level, you know, recognizing that without insects, most fruits and vegetables will not be pollinated. You won't have chocolate or coffee or honey. And so many ways that we're, you know, the soil's being aerated. And I was meeting these young people who are in the midst of studying those things. And I would just encourage anybody to get, you know, be conscious about that. But then it's such a not only a valuable thing to be working on, but it also, it's so heartening. You know, if you're feeling like sad and about the condition of things, getting in touch with the natural world in so many different ways that one can do that is an antidote to this feeling like they're going the wrong direction. And that I think the more we're connected to the natural world, the more generally hopeful one will feel. We are all so absorbed by our phones. It's really, really easy to do that. And I say this as somebody who has that issue also. And just the time that you spend not doing that, looking up, maybe taking, you know, having a pause day on, aside from news, on all, you know, internet activity, you may discover quickly your attention coming back to you in ways that you wouldn't expect. And also just the looking up and looking around. I've been trying to be more proactive about just not, if I'm in an environment, like say on a subway, that I just sit there and look around me and take in the experience rather than say have headphones on and listening to music or staring at my phone doing a Wordle.
In the book, you also, along with citing the articles in which you derive these comics from. You also do have some quotes in here. You have one from Albert Einstein. It has become appallingly obvious that our technology has exceeded our humanity.
Yeah, it was not hard for me to find quotes like this. Another one was E.O. Wilson. It said, "Destroying rainforest for economic gain is like burning a Renaissance painting to cook a meal." There were all these, you know, as I just went flipping through things, I could find really great quotes. Here's one from Alexander von Humboldt from an 1804 letter. "The wants and restless activity of large communities of men gradually despoil the face of the earth." And he wrote that to Thomas Jefferson. I was in, you know, the 1800s. Mm-hmm. So people have been conscious of the environment who have been paying attention. And the final one is, "If you think the economy is more important than the environment, try holding your breath while counting your money."
Right.
Well done.
And for some reason, I love people finding the nut of something like that and being able to point at it in a way that if you just quote it, you recognize how absurd the notion of running towards money is. And that's sort of another factor is I feel like we're at a time where, considering what we're doing with our time, how we're spending it, and what we're, you know, how our day is shaped, is more and more it's something I'm looking at and trying to make good calculations on when I need to go out for a walk and beef with friends, and as opposed to trying to earn a living, and which is of course important, but where the, you know, dollars stop making sense.
Well, Peter, you are endlessly fascinating to speak with. We appreciate your time and you coming back on This Green Earth. You have put together a new book, and it is called Wish We Weren't Here, Postcards from the Apocalypse. Some people have called it a global obituary, but I think, as we have just spoken about, there is moments of hope in there, and there's moments of understanding about our humanity and how we can make a difference.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
Thanks for listening to This Green Earth. If you have an idea, we'd love to hear from you. Give us your ideas and topics, your storylines. It's thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. You can also find us wherever you listen to your podcast. If you like the show and you learned something new, make sure you leave a review. And we'd appreciate it if you click 5 stars.